Thanks. Our second presentation is from Don Ziegler, who is the director for the American Medical Association of Long Range Healthcare Trends, and is also a representative on the APHA Trade and Health Forum from the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Drugs section. Don.
Thanks very much. I'm delighted to be here. My previous role at the AMA, I was the Deputy Director of the Office of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Abuse, and at that point got very interested in the trade agreements. And let's see how we do this. Okay. Trade, allegedly, is supposed to be very good. It's like unfettered capitalism, although that's been questioned recently in America, but it's supposed to enhance competition, efficiency, lower prices, and have better quality, more choice, more investment. And then when you have all economic prosperity, that's supposed to lead to good health. Now, trade agreements are, negotiated in secret by governments and not often, always in consultation with business interests. And this is something Stan's going to recognize. It's a lot easier to sell cigarettes or tobacco, or I mean alcohol, when you have the government on your team. And there's such a congruence of trade policy and of governments and business interests. There's a philosophy of free trade, unfettered by regulation. Governments tend to promote the interests and the rights of their major industries and producers, and this is most obvious on tobacco and very definitely on alcohol as well. Now, in government, at least in our government, and probably a lot of other places, there's this revolving door. People going government, business, the trade lawyers go in and out of government service. They write the official texts of these trade laws, and they later use these as tools on behalf of their future corporate clients. An example, there's some very good ones from the tobacco area, but I won't get into that, but Deborah Lamb worked for the U.S. Senate Finance Committee for 10 years, and that formulated the trade relations with China. Well, now she's a vice president of international issues for the Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S., which is a conglomerate of all the hard liquor companies, not wine, not beer, but the distilled spirits industry, and it's called DISCUS. And she now is on she's a member of one of the 14, two of the 14 advisory committees of the U.S. Trade Representative. And she has been advisor to the Bush administration, not surprisingly. The trade representative, U.S. trade representative, answers as part of the administrative section of the government. And there are 14 committees, and of those 14, three of them have very strong alcohol representation. The one that's called consumer goods, the distribution services, intellectual property. They don't have any public health representation. And it's interesting that this issue of not having public health voice on these, that there's no public impact statement, was even recognized by the U.S. government's accountability office, which has formally recognized that there ought to be. There's limited involvement of the public, let alone the public health voices on these. Now, the American Public Health Association and groups like Center for Science and or Center for Policy Analysis on Trade and Health have been dealing with this issue, to sue the U.S. Trade Representative to get a public health voice on it. Now, the global trade since the 90s under the World Trade Organization at the global level. And this is the only global international organization dealing with the rules of trade between nations. Now, there's 153 countries. They were started in 1995, this group. There were a whole bunch of trade agreements through the decades, but mostly dealing with tariff issues. And the groups came together in Uruguay in 1995, and there is very significant influence of non-governmental organizations, very strong business interests in their meetings. And in a recent Singapore ministerial meeting of the WTO, 65% of the civic organizations accredited to be NGOs represented business interests. And some that you saw in Glantz's slide too, these are some of the major agreements under the WTO. Well, first one dealing with tariff issues. The second on barriers to trade. The third is on intellectual property, which is very interesting, called TRIPS. And the one that seems to have the most impact on the area of alcohol control is the agreement on trade in services. Now, in these, actually WTO governs over a dozen different agreements. These are some of the major ones. But they also obligate governments at their federal level, the state and local level, there are rules that are established with strong enforcement mechanisms. There's a dispute panel of trade experts with no expertise, or probably no willingness to know anything about public health. They meet in secret. There's no amicus allowed, and their decisions are binding with significant consequences enforced by sanctions or fines. This trumps even our local laws that we'll talk about. Now, GATS, Global Agreement on Trade and Services, is the first and only set of multilateral rules governing the international trade in services. Now, services can be a lot of things. They could be professional, health-related, education, environmental services. But no government action, whatever its purpose, is beyond the scrutiny of GATS, including measures taken by the central, regional, or local governments and authorities and non-governmental bodies in the exercise of their government-related powers. I mean, this is amazing clout that these treaties have. Now, services might include research and development on natural sciences, production, marketing, distribution, sales, and products. For example, related to alcohol, it could very specifically be about the production, transportation of grain to the brewery or the distillery, alcohol production, bottling, distribution, marketing, advertising, and even serving alcohol. All the things that relate to any of those activities would be covered by GATS. Now, the former Director General of the WTO said something very, very revealing in 1998. He said, GATS provides guarantees into areas never before recognized as trade policy. And he said, I suspect that neither governments nor industries have yet appreciated the full scope of these guarantees or the full value of existing commitments. Commitments are your agreement to open up your markets. Well, the industries are beginning to appreciate what is there. And governments are getting caught with their pants down. Now, Stan mentioned the World Bank and some of their statements on this, on tobacco. But the World Bank has been somewhat critical of the trade agreements, believe it or not. And they indicate that the powerful countries can use trade that they want to open up as a way to control of what happens in countries that want to join the WTO. Everybody wants to join the WTO, become prosperous, but then say, okay, you want to join. Before you do, you've got to do X, Y, Z. And they strangle them. And there's some examples in Algeria. And these things, the World Bank said, these are one-sided power plays by current WTO members which wring commercial advantage out of weaker economic partners. That's the World Bank language. And Algeria, for example, which is, as you know, a Muslim country, which is not too favorable to alcohol, well, they wanted to join the WTO, but they had to lift their ban on alcohol imports to help get in the WTO. And who's going to benefit? The multinational corporations. The U.S. used alcohol. The U.S. Really gave Vietnam a hard time getting into the WTO. It was a major obstacle. And one of the things that they said was for the U.S. said, okay, Vietnam wants to join the WTO, they have to change their tax policies, which favor U.S. domestic alcohol, specifically the spirits. And when you have your government working on your interests, it's very powerful. Well, now, besides these international agreements, there are these regional, like NAFTA, which is between Mexico, U.S., and Canada. And there are bilateral agreements. And of these, there are over 380 now around the world. And they all have something in common with the WTO, but they can go beyond. And they can become stricter and have other provisions that are really grab countries by places you don't want to be grabbed by. And I'll give you some examples. And right now there's some, 5 minutes, I better go. Okay. Right now we're negotiating with Colombia, huh? I know, it sure does. Okay. All right. Now, in the regional ones, they're easier to implement and have a lot of independent obligations to them. And give you some examples of that here if I can. Now, the World Spirits Alliance is an international body or informal body of alcohol companies, and as far back as 1993 at the Cancun WTO meeting, they said, these are some of the things that we want to do in trade agreements. We want to reduce tariffs, because when you do reduce tariffs, you reduce the price of things, and then the products can be more desirable and higher consumption. And then reduce non-tariff measures, like import quotas, licensing, state trading, some of the monopoly things where governments actually control the distribution, like in Canada, or our 18 states that are control states in the United States that control the alcohol distribution, and definitely in Scandinavia, and labeling requirements and other things that are in there. The World Spirit Alliance also said we want to deal with services. Well, services also, the liberalization of restrictions on marketing. Well, we in alcohol control, we want to restrict marketing, because marketing promotes, you know, consumption. And for definitely, well, they want to open that. They have another agenda. They want to restrict the firms that are engaged in importation, distribution, and retailing, and intellectual property. And they might have a case on this. The geographical indications. You know, if a company is called Champagne, well, you know, give them, you know, protect that name, or bourbon. You know, so somebody else doesn't steal that name, or Budweiser, for example. You know, but and that is a big area. For them as well, because they got to protect their brands. In Hong Kong, the World Spirits Alliance called for the elimination of non-tariff barriers. And they said, okay, if we can't do that, if we can't get the services, we're going to go through another area. We're going to deal with the technical barriers of trade, which gives them a lot of clout, and I've got to move. Now, corporations, they act to open markets. And they use political intimidation. I'll give the example of Discus again, distilled spirits. A few years ago, when the European Commission and the U.S. successfully challenged Chile to change its tax policy, because there was a difference in tax before about the imported spirits in their pisco. Their local alcohol. Well, if you bring in the multinational brands, it increases their consumption quite a bit. And the Discus took credit for this. And I got to move fast. 2 minutes left. Oh, it's not fair. And it's interesting. Another example. There are countries in development had certain status of getting free import of their products as a preferential treatment. Well, Romania wanted to continue that. It's a poor country in Eastern Europe. I did some work there a few years ago. Well, Discus said, "Well, we're not going to. If you, we're not going to do anything. We have to. Romania has to change its policies to be able to import their U.S. spirits," and they took credit for causing these restrictions to continue. Okay. Now, there's obviously an inherent tension between the trade treaties and health promoting alcohol regulation. And we think, and there's very good literature, that alcohol should not be treated as any just ordinary commodity like sugar or cotton in trade agreements. that it be treated more like a sensitive product, treated differently with more controls and restrictions. The European community says, oh, no, no, we don't want alcohol to be a sensitive issue. I mean, not like arms or ammunition or explosives. Alcohol and tobacco are just consumer products. So the more the merrier. So what effect does trade liberalization have on the use of the products? Well, when you have more competition for market share, it is affected. There's more market share, more competition, you bring in consumption. You bring in more aggressive advertising, lower prices, and there's the aspirational aspect. So you get sexy international brands, something that's easier to smoke, different flavor, or you get the Alka-Pops for young girls or whatever, and this increases problems. And what's at stake in alcohol control? Well, these agreements, because local governments can't do something or are afraid to do something because they might be challenged under international trade laws, that has a chilling effect on alcohol policy. So, and some of the things that might be affected by these are the distribution of alcohol, time is up, okay? But things like licensing, which like the hours of service of bars, might be affected. The number of outlets, we might not be able to limit bars in community and college communities. Keg registration, other things might be affected, as well as government monopolies. So, also education, different things on advertising and sponsorship might be affected by these laws. So, what do you see here? It's a picture of Katrina. And what is happening is with these trade, with the increase of a global economy, of a huge number of young people around the world, and the threats to public health or low public health restrictions around the world, and these trade agreements, we're creating a perfect storm for problems of alcohol abuse and problems around the world as we have it with tobacco. So ways to address it would be to encourage the World Health Organization to do more on alcohol, to deal with the health ministries and NGOs, raise awareness, have no ordinary commodity status for in the trade agreements, and maybe eventually, maybe not now, have a framework convention on alcohol as we do on tobacco. So that's who I am, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Don. We do have our fourth speaker here who unfortunately has a scheduling conflict. He can only be with us for 10 minutes. So we're going to have him do a 10-minute presentation now, then we'll have Susanna will speak, and then we'll have some time for questions on the end. So here, let's see.